Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Economic reports we've gotten recently have been really encouraging. You know, we saw this morning that the economy in the second quarter grew by 2.8%. That's stronger than expected. That's stronger than in kind of a normal economic time. And, you know, taking a step back, I think really shows that since President Biden and Vice President Harris have come into office, the economy has outperformed expectations.
Deputy Director of the White House's National Economic Council, Daniel Hornig.
We now have the strongest economic growth of any of our peer countries, at the same time that we have the lowest inflation. So much more work to do on the economy. President Biden and Vice President Harris both believe to continue to make sure we're lowering costs for families, expanding opportunity, growing jobs, but really encouraging set of reports.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
When you say most people, I mean, it even goes farther than that. You'd have to go to Singapore at this point to actually find a place to eat it.
What is it? Lab-grown meat. Sigrid Johannes, Senior Director, Government Affairs, National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
This was a grant program that went through the DOD, and it's funding that they were directing to a company called BioMade, which is one of their public-private partnerships that they invest in pretty heavily each year. And in May, we became aware that there was an RFP, a request for proposals, looking into the development of cell-cultured protein as a food source. You right off the bat noticed a couple of the issues with that, or a couple of the flags that we put up there. But I think there's two main areas of concern. One is cost. This is an extremely expensive product to produce. Not to mention it's an industry and kind of an area of novel development that is receiving billions of dollars in private investment. I certainly don't think we need to add taxpayer dollars to that heap when you have folks like Jeff Bezos and Bill Gates who are investing in this. But then on the other hand, it's also got a lot of questions around the production process. We don't yet know, for example, how antimicrobial resistance is going to work with this kind of product that's being grown in a sterile vat, essentially, with a lot of different additives. And we don't have any human nutrition studies done yet because nobody's really eating it yet at scale. And so when you look at the need for protein with our nation's military and our service members, we totally understand DOD's desire to, you know, supply a steady, reliable, secure food supply to our military members and our armed forces. But luckily, American farmers and ranchers are already producing an enormous amount of beef and other animal proteins, for that matter, that can meet that need.
Why is this even a possibility?
So I think the important thing to focus on is we do have some good news here. We did get confirmation from DOD that they are no longer pursuing this as a food option, as a food source for human consumption. So that's a big win from our perspective. This is not something that we think belongs on the plate of armed forces or their families, and so we're pretty pleased to see that. Again, there's a huge number of both livestock and plant commodities that are produced in the United States that can meet the nutritional needs of our armed forces. But additionally, you know, we really found out who some of our great allies are in Congress during this process. We flagged the issue early on for a huge number of our agriculture folks, but there are also a lot of members who might be veterans themselves or who have a heavy military presence in their district who looked at this from that angle. And we're kind of thinking, is this the best use of our defense budget dollars? Is this what we want to see the DOD investing in at this time? So we're very appreciative of members like Congressman Don Bacon from Nebraska in the House and Senator Deb Fischer from Nebraska in the Senate, folks like Roger Marshall in Kansas, Warren Davidson from North Carolina, and others who have really raised this issue and pursued a couple different avenues to try to block this funding. I say a couple, Tony, because as you know very well, Congress is a little dysfunctional these days. We always need more than one swing at the pinata, and so we've worked on amendments to both the DOD and the Ag FDA appropriations bills, but also the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, trying to get this particular grant defunded. But at the end of the day, DOD has already responded. They've already confirmed that they're not going to use this technology for food production. And so we're going to keep pursuing those legislative fixes just to be safe. It's always better to be safe than sorry. But we think we've succeeded in getting this one off the plate.
So if that's good news, what about the farm bill?
Unfortunately, I would say at this point, if you're a betting person, it is a pretty safe bet to say that that fiscal year 23 farm bill, what we were aiming for, is now not just looking like 2024, but is probably even the 2025 farm bill. I think it's going to be a really tall order for Congress to get that piece of legislation done.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
I'd like to welcome you all today to today's hearing on the state of the farm economy.
House Ag Committee recently holding a hearing in the House Ag Committee. G.T. Thompson, chairman from Pennsylvania.
I'd like to extend a special welcome and thanks to our witnesses. The panel that we've convened will share their insights and personal experiences on the deteriorating financial conditions facing producers and agricultural supply chain. Agriculture is not just an industry, it is the backbone of our economy and a cornerstone of our national security. American farmers, ranchers, and the supply chain they rely on work together tirelessly to feed and clothe our nation and the world while providing more than 48 million jobs. Despite the resilience and ingenuity, the unprecedented challenges facing the entire agriculture sector threaten to ignite another farm financial crisis. Declining prices, cash receipts, escalating natural disasters, and increasing input costs have created a perfect storm that will compromise the foundation of our agriculture economy. We're living through the largest two-year decline in farm income in history. At the end of 2024, total farm sector debt will be the highest in the United States as seen at least since 1970. Most farmers and ranchers, including those here today with us, are likely to be worse off financially by year's end. Unfortunately, the farm safety net that is meant to provide our farmers and ranchers with stability during these times has not seen significant investment since 2002. In fact, the resources dedicated to the total farm net safety net have declined 30% over the past 22 years. The commodity title alone has seen an 81% reduction in spending power during that same time. Simply put, the lack of support for those that feed the world is unacceptable. That's why this committee listened to the communities across the country and passed the Bipartisan Farm, Food, and National Security Act of 2024 2 months ago. It represents the largest permanent investment in the farm safety net. Conservation, trade promotion, specialty crops, research, and livestock biosecurity in more than two decades. It will give renewed strength to the farm safety net just when producers need it most.
Hearing focused on financial conditions in farm country, Tony Hotchkiss is chairman of the American Bankers Association's Ag and Rural Bankers Committee from Indiana.
Agricultural bankers do believe there are some additional farm bill provisions that could be added in the future. This includes the creation of a national process for FSA guaranteed loan programs to speed up the loan-making process, and also opening Farmer Mac up by removing the cooperative lender requirement for energy project loans. Beyond the 2024 Farm Bill, there are many provisions within tax reform that are vitally important to agriculture, banks, and their customers, such as carrying on the current estate tax exemptions and capital gains exemptions for agriculture. The Access to Credit for Our Rural Economy Act, better known as ACRE Act, is tax legislation that would create a level playing field for all lenders to agriculture. ABA analysis has shown that the ACRE Act would result in a 50 to 100 basis point reduction in interest rates for qualified borrowers. Farm banks are healthy and continue to be forward-looking, growing capital, and increasing reserves. Bankers are proud of the work we do to support our nation's farmers and ranchers. The ag community is a critical part of our economy, and America's banks remain committed to serve it through good times and bad.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
I think a big issue to look at is what the direction of the, I guess, the carry in the market is.
That's Dr. Dan O'Brien. He's a grain marketing economist at Kansas State University, breaking down carry cost and future opportunities in grains.
When you look at the corn futures complex, so you've got a carrying charge of from the September to the December contract of just under 5 cents a bushel from the December to March. You'd be looking at about 4.8 cents, again, just under 5, over 5 cents in May. So that's a futures complex that's giving farmers a signal to store grain. And it's basically telling them from as you're sitting at, by the time you get new crop bids, 420 and three quarters. You've got July out at 452, so that's a 30-cent carry. Most farmers, in that, when as they see the volatility of markets, they'll say, "Gosh, in a moving market, we can gain that in a day." But I guess as more of a conservative approach to storage, we could put on storage hedges, and as particularly for on farm stored grain that has a little less cost and make some money on that. So that's something to consider. We have carrying charges also in soybeans once we get past November, and if anything, they're a little bit stronger up front than for corn. So November harvest beans, their carry from September 24 contract in November is about 2.5 cents a bushel. But beyond that, you're from November to January over 7 cents a bushel. From January to March, about just under five, and about four from out into May. So again, another market that's giving carrying charges. Given what the market knows right now, given its assumptions about what we're going to have for the rest of the summer, how this crop is going to work out, it's giving signals in corn and soybeans to plan to store next year's crop. But there's a lot of uncertainty that has to be dealt with as you work through that. I should also say for wheat, we also have some carries for wheat, hard red winter, from September to December, about just under 6 cents a bushel, about four and two-thirds cents a bushel from December to March 25, about 3.6 cents a bushel out to May. Then, of course, it drops off into July. So at this point in time, for wheat, as well as these other markets go, we have the presumption of good crops coming. Market's really not accounting for a lot of risk. It's thinking, well, gosh, whatever we harvest, we'll have to store it. So it's giving these carrying charges. So when you look at the likelihood of that occurring, that will be largely from here on out a weather dependent event. And I know our colleagues, such as Chip Redmond in-house here at Kansas State, other independent analysts have been talking about, forecasts for some pretty hot conditions in August. Here's my take on that. You know, we've been watching these El Nino La Nina transition forecasts for several months now. And what happened as I understand, is going to view from our climatological weather forecasting brethren, that the time of hotness, dryness, which you thought was going to come originally in July, well, it's now being pushed off into August, September, basically into late summer and fall. Yet you've got forecasts of some pretty hot and dry weather coming in.
Kansas State grain marketing economist Dan O'Brien. It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Well, our last farm bill was in 2018. That was passed with relatively little drama.
Kansas State ag policy expert Jenny Ift.
We had an extension last year. One or two extensions are completely normal if you look at the history of the farm bill. Right now, the window is narrowing for a new farm bill in 2024. There's still a chance. I think most people, even if you'd like to see a farm bill, I think at this point an extension is at least equally likely. It could be after the election. You hear a lot of different predictions right now. Some politicians have come out and said it's probably going to be next year. Some are still really optimistic and pushing to get it through this year. Recently, 500 organizations wrote a letter to Congress urging them to pass a new farm bill this year. And this was a pretty diverse group. You have some major farm lenders in there, commodity groups, environmental groups, some groups from our own state in Kansas. Some I haven't heard of, the American Woodcock Society. I'm sure they do great work, though. But again, most of them are really a lot of influential groups and not just in agriculture.
But she does admit there's been delays on both sides of the aisle.
For the Democrats, they really want to protect nutrition funding, the nutrition programs. There's also some additional funding for conservation under the Inflation Reduction Act, and it has what's being called climate guardrails on it. So the Democrats want to keep those climate guardrails, while some Republicans want to have a little bit more flexibility. And so there's sort of, two sides to that, really, that climate-related conservation funding can cover a wide variety of practices, but it may not fit what's most needed in a particular area. And of course, once you talk about climate, it can become a very political discussion. There's a lot of Republican legislators right now that are talking about keeping the farm in the farm bill. So there's also, you know, pressure to increase reference prices to strengthen the safety net. And we're in a period of relatively low farm income and tightening profit margins for most farms now, especially crop farms. So there's efforts to strengthen that. The issue and the challenge has been finding the budget to do that.
But she also believes that an extension, especially at this point in time, appears imminent.
That, you know, the House is only scheduled to be in session for 3 weeks between right now and mid-November. So there's not a lot of time before we get into a lame duck session. You know, anything could happen, but the longer it goes, the harder it is going to be to get a new farm bill. You know, maybe in a lame duck session, the questions about the power balance should largely be resolved, one would expect. So, you know, there may be more potential for compromise. And you really do need compromise. I mean, no matter what happens, you're almost certainly going to need both parties to compromise for a farm bill. So for the Senate, typically you need 60 votes to pass a bill for most legislation. So you need people from two parties. On the House side, you have some Republicans who are members of the Freedom Caucus that probably wouldn't support a farm bill. Same on the, you know, Democrat side, who have some members. So you really do need members of both parties in both houses to support a farm bill. I think it's going to be challenging to pass a farm bill this year. I mean, it's always challenging to pass a farm bill. There are some reasons you want to do it. And if you get enough groups that are pushing, you may be able to do that. If not, we'll likely have an extension and they'll have to deal with it next year.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
I want to commend the committee for advancing a bipartisan farm bill that addresses the significant challenges of all growers.
Cotton farmer David Dunlow from North Carolina at a House Ag Committee hearing on financial conditions in farm country.
The bottom line is producers need real relief before the end of this year. We can't wait any longer. Members of Congress must understand that another straight extension of the current law is unacceptable. Without support in 2024, I may no longer be able to farm. Many others are in the same situation.
Tony Hotchkiss, chairman of the American Bankers Association's Ag and Rural Bankers Committee from Indiana.
I am the chairman of the American Bankers Association Agricultural and Rural Bankers Committee, and I'm testifying in that capacity today. I have 41 years of agricultural banking experience, the last 10 as director of agriculture for Regions Bank, from which I recently retired. Before Regions, I worked in a number of community banks helping to lead their ag lending. I was raised in Iowa, and like many ag bankers across this country, I grew up watching, learning, and working for family and friends who were farmers and ranchers. Ag bankers have a deep appreciation for the important role producers play in our economy and the unique challenges they face. I appreciate the opportunity today to present the views of the American Bankers Association on financial conditions in farm country. Banks continue to be one of the first places that farmers and ranchers turn when looking for agricultural loans. Our agricultural credit portfolio is very diverse. Banks finance large farms, small farms, urban farmers, beginning farmers, women farmers, minority farmers. To bankers, agricultural lending is good business, and we make credit available to all who can demonstrate they have a sound business plan and the ability to repay. With our deep connection to farmers and ranchers, banks are often the first to see changes within balance sheets and cash flows on the farm operation, often due to changing economic conditions. Today, I'd like to outline the current state of the agricultural economy as it relates to our customers and opportunities in which Congress could offer solutions which would reduce stress on all borrowers and lenders. With rising input costs and lower commodity prices, farmers and ranchers have worked through the liquidity and working capital they built up over the past few years at a more rapid pace than anticipated and are now beginning to leverage equity through refinancing debt. This has made agricultural bankers feel like they are looking over the cliff in regards to the agricultural economy. For example, we're hearing that bankers already are starting to refinance debt for almond growers in California, and we are hopeful this is an outlier and not a growing trend. The challenge with refinancing is that with low commodity prices, the cash flow is challenged to even meet the new payment requirements of the refinanced debt. As has already been mentioned, the USDA is projecting net farm income to drop approximately 25% from 2023 to 2024. Some regions of the country will feel the effects sooner than others, but all will feel it. Based on this, the trend of refinancing debt may become more commonplace and more challenging as lenders and producers work together to bridge the low prices we are experiencing in ag commodities. Changes are needed to government policy to combat a slowing agricultural economy. The 2024 Farm Bill provides many of the needed changes. An increase in the FSA guaranteed loan limits is very good. Improvements to the down payment assistance program is very good. And the revised definitions for who qualifies for beginning farmer and rancher programs is also good. And were all ABA priorities that were included in the 2024 Farm Bill.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
When I look at the current crop conditions, which I think the market's pretty much paying attention to,
Kansas State grain marketing economist, Dr. Dan O'Brien.
Because they'll take those crop conditions, put them into yield models, and they're shooting to the high side, 181 bushel corn, 52 bushel soybeans or more. And really, the market looks at that based on quantified numbers, especially with algorithmic traders, computerized traders. We take the attitude of show me any crop problems. Well, if we do get these forecasts of pretty hot and dry conditions, and not just with El Nino, but other factors all coming into play, then we look and see what the patterns historically have been for these good to excellent percent ratings for these crops, and do they tend to hold up? In most years, we tend to see as we go on from July into August, September, a decline in those numbers. So I think that'll be the real issue that we'll be wrestling with here from here on out to into September. Now I know we've got farmers that have old crop grain in storage, and what do we tell them? how do you tell them to deal with that? Because if they've held grain this long, haven't moved it, then they'll have to cut the fine edge of waiting for some crop risk to give them some better prices, but then not waiting too long and having the market to continue in their current narrative of large crops and then collapse even further into fall. So it just seems to me like a very risky time, very uncertain time. If we felt better about buying call options, we tell people, gosh, go ahead and sell your cash and get the best basis situation you can. And by the way, there are some pretty good isolated basis bids for corn. Actually, in western Kansas, we have some pretty good, we have positive basis bids. So that's showing the other side of all that. Point is, so going forward, one thing they could do is to sell cash, get a good basis off it. Then if they think there's a potential for a strong rally, to buy a call option, and then wrestle with the issue of how much they spend for it. I would like to add in that we've tried, at least on my part, we've tried to put together probability-based scenarios where these markets might go heading off into the rest of the summer and growing season off into fall. And it's a yield-driven issue. We'll have a yield-driven corn market from now into harvest, basically. And probably about a 50% chance, given where we stand right now, that the USDA is right. 181 bushels an acre, no problem. But some would probably say, well, gosh, that's only a 50% chance? I think with the hot, dry weather forecast out there, probably, we're looking at either record 177.3 bushel an acre or somewhere between the 181 and the 177, say 179. So I think my own thinking, you've got like a 3 out of 10 chance that USDA is going to end up with that number being too high. And so plug in 179 bushels an acre, run the math on ending stock, stocks to use, and you go from the USDA's price projection of $4.30 to about $4.55. If through a combination of things being too wet at some places, too hot and dry others, if you end up lower than that, if you only get the old record yield, 177.3, you're down to about a 14.8 billion bushel corn crop, 1.8 billion bushel ending stock, stocks to use about 12% instead of 14, and prices closer to $4.75 to $5.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
90% of the characterization is false.
Director of the Heritage Foundation's Project 2025, Paul Dance.
We've put out like a true and false, and it's been actually, in fairness to the media, debunked that it has anything to do with President Trump. That is, nonetheless, a lot of made-up policies are trying to be grafted into it that are just nowhere found. But to be sure, the people who are screaming the loudest about it have the most to lose. They are really the ones defending this deep state. They are defending the anti-democracy. This is really Projection 2025 on behalf of the left. It's not Project 2025. So whatever they're saying, you know, pointing at us with their finger, they have four fingers pointing back at them. Remember everyone who died from COVID. Remember that disastrous pullout in Afghanistan. Even remember what happened on Saturday. All these are products of this deep state, and we need to reinfuse political control over this bureaucracy.